So on because we're starting a series over quite possibly one of the weirdest stories in the Bible, maybe the weirdest story in the Bible, I just went to BuzzFeed and just looked up what are some weird stories, things of coincidence that take place. And anytime you go to BuzzFeed, you come away with some interesting stuff. And I thought I'd read just two or three that I found to kick off of just interesting stories. The first one that came up by a woman named Tamara Baker, she said, when I was around 8, my dog followed my dad to wait for me for my school bus. While they were waiting, my dad saw Fluffy get hit by a truck. So he took Fluffy and buried him. We then went out of town for the weekend, but on Sunday evening when we got home, Fluffy was standing on the porch. Dad couldn't believe it and told us, I buried that dog on Friday. Turns out, Fluffy had just been knocked out cold, so he rose from the dead and waited on us to come home like a good, loyal dog. The next one, by a woman named Valerie Perrault. My parents were newlyweds in New Jersey and then moved to Illinois after I was born. They lived there my entire childhood, and then they divorced the year I graduated high school. My dad moved to Las Vegas and my mom to Texas, and when I turned 30, I took a job in South Florida. I was the first and only member of my family to ever even travel to South Florida. While at a local Goodwill, in search of some home furnishings, I found an old book of poetry on a kitchenware shelf, and I liked the look of the cover, so I bought it for a quarter and took it home with the rest of my stuff. Later that night, I opened the front cover and was shocked to see an inscription in my dad's unmistakable handwriting. It was his gift to my mom on their 3rd wedding anniversary. My mom had sold it at a yard sale 10 or so years earlier. Both of them have since confirmed this. I just thought it was crazy. An unlucky one by an anonymous writer. He said, a couple of years ago, I was flat broke and in a store spending my last couple of bucks on ramen noodles to get me through payday. The lottery happened to be high, so I decided to spend what was literally my last $2 on a ticket. This little old lady walked up behind me, and since the store was packed, I let her go ahead of me in the line. She purchased one quick pick lottery ticket. I then purchased my lottery ticket and ramen noodles and went home. You see where this is going, right? A couple of days later, I saw her on the news as the only winner of a $90 million jackpot. Had I not let her go in front of me, I would have purchased that ticket and I'd be a millionaire right now. And then my favorite one, I don't even know that it's weird coincidence, but somehow this made the BuzzFeed. I was eating lunch at a local Wendy's when Bill Murray, yes, the Bill Murray, sat down at my table, stole a French fry, dipped it into my Frosty, and ate it. He then looked at me and said, nobody's going to believe you, and walked away. You got to tell that one, right? So this story of Jonah is fascinating with interesting coincidences, and I wanted to know, as weird as this story is, has anything like this ever happened outside of human history? And there was a guy a few hundred years ago by the name of James Bartley. And his story is this, is that during a whaling expedition off the Falkland Islands, Bartley's boat was attacked by the whale, and he landed inside the whale's mouth. He survived the ordeal and was carved out of the stomach by his peers when they, not knowing he was inside, caught and began skinning the whale because the weather was hot and otherwise the whale meat would have rotted. It was said that Bartley was inside the whale for 36 hours, that his skin had been bleached by the gastric juices, and that he was blind for the rest of his life. In some accounts, however, he was supposed to have returned to work within 3 weeks. He died 18 years later, and his tombstone in Gloucester says, James Bartley, a modern-day Jonah. Now, the story of Jonah, as many of you might know, and it was toward the end of it was read this morning to start off, is one that has a lot of weird and interesting moments. But early on in the story, it's not that weird, right? We start off as Jonah, just your everyday guy, is told by God, go to Nineveh and preach against their evil and wicked ways. Tell them what they've been doing wrong. Now, In your kids' Bible stories, for those of you who heard the story before, we hear Jonah was told to go to Nineveh. He didn't want to, so he didn't go. There's a little more to it than that. You see, Nineveh was the capital city of Assyria. And at that time, Assyria was the nation who had come and overthrown Israel and taken Israel into captivity. So to go to Nineveh, the capital city of Assyria, would be to say, go to the nation that captured you, who is treating you horribly, who slaughters a number of your people on a regular basis and doesn't lose any sleep over it. Go to that capital city, find the most powerful people of this nation, and tell them they're terrible. Okay? It wouldn't be popular for me to come out here and just say, hey, I want y'all to know y'all are the worst, and start off that way. That's what God was telling Jonah to do to a group of people who would have gladly killed him and not lost a bit of sleep over it. So, while Jonah wasn't right to run away, you kind of get it, right? Like, no, it wasn't the right thing to do, but you kind of understand why he did this. Story's not weird yet, though. He gets on a boat, sails the opposite direction from Nineveh. Jonah falls asleep on the boat, and the storm picks up, and it gets the boat rocking. And the sailors go, they wake up Jonah, they say, you need to pray to your God. We're all praying to our gods. Let's pray so that whatever God is causing this to happen, we'll make it stop. And the sailors on this boat were probably like so many of the other nations. See, most nations at this time of the book of Jonah, they believed in polytheism, the belief of multiple gods. So it was pray to all the gods. Maybe we'll, find the right God we're praying to and they'll fix it. While they tell Jonah to start praying, they start casting lots. And the lots fall to Jonah. And they look at Jonah and say, who are you? What have you done? Why is this happening? Explain it to us. These guys were really, really superstitious, right? And so Jonah then says, well, I am an Israelite. I worship the Hebrew God, the God of the heavens and the earth, the maker of the land and the sea, which is exactly what was going nuts and causing this group of men to potentially die. They look at him and they say, what have you done to cause this storm, for this God to cause this storm? And Jonah said, well, I was told to go to Nineveh, but I hopped on this boat because I was going the opposite direction. I didn't want to do what God told me to do. And they look, they start freaking out. They're praying to God. They're thinking, okay, we didn't do anything wrong, but we are stuck with this guy who did. So they look at Jonah and they say, what do we do? He said, it's really simple. I'm the one who did wrong, not you. Throw me over the boat. Now, when you hear throw me over the boat, we need to put that into perspective. You see, if we were to toss any one of us over the boat, it's pretty simple, right? We get on a different boat, or if nothing else, we get off the boat and we got to figure something out, that we just call the Coast Guard and they come and rescue. Coast Guard doesn't exist at this time. If you fall out of a boat and they can't get you back in the boat, you're dead. There's no other way to be saved, especially not in a storm like this. So the men know that this God whom Jonah worships has caused this storm. So if they were to look out, if they're to then throw Jonah overboard, then this man of God who caused this storm, they have now slaughtered. What might God do to them then? So they all get down on their knees right before they do this, and they say, Lord, please don't hold what we're about to do against us. And they pick up Jonah, and they throw him overboard, believing he is going to die because of this. And they're thinking, we don't have a problem with him, but it's either him or all of us. And right as Jonah goes into the water, the rain stops, the clouds calm, the winds go away, the sea is just still. These men immediately begin worshiping God. Now, from the beginning of chapter 1 all the way to now, it's unique, but we've heard other stories like it, right? We hear stories about Jesus calming storms and seas. We've heard about some unique things that could take place in a variety of ways. But it's not weird yet. Verse 17, the very last verse of chapter 1, changes all of that. And it says, and then God provided a fish to come and swallow Jonah, and he was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and nights. You've got to be kidding me. Out of all the different ways that this could have happened, he's in the belly of a fish for 3 days and nights. But what I want to focus on is a word in chapter 17 that sticks out. As weird as the fish is, because the truth is, we end up focusing our attention on the fish. Who wouldn't, right? It's really, really weird. Why in the world would God cause a fish? Now, For starters, by the men throwing him into the water, there was no way for Jonah to be saved. He wasn't going to get back on the boat. The storm would start back up again. So the sailors were not about to let him back up. So they're believing he's going to die. So to think, the fact that the fish swallowed him was Jonah's only opportunity at surviving is kind of truth in this story. Jonah wasn't going to survive any other way. Jonah had probably accepted his death at this point too. And when we get to next week, and we read about a prayer of Jonah in chapter 2, it sounds like Jonah had kind of accepted that that was his fate. He deserved what was about to happen. So the word I want to focus on in verse 17 of chapter 1 is this: the Lord provided. Some of your versions might say that God appointed a fish. Either way, you can look and we can acknowledge that God in his sovereignty chose to intervene in what was taking place and still take care of Jonah, despite Jonah doing exactly the opposite of what God had told him to do. It's not the first time this has happened, though. Genesis chapter 3, we hear about the story of Adam and Eve. Now, the story of Adam and Eve actually starts in Genesis chapter 2, and the very last verse of Genesis chapter 2 says this. God's created Adam, he's created Eve. This first marriage comes into play and they're happy, and that's, you know, happily ever after, right? Everything's done. The very last verse of chapter 2, it says, "And Adam and Eve were naked and felt no shame." Kind of a random verse in some ways. I need to explain the importance of this, though, and the value of this, because in our day and age, if someone were to walk in here completely naked right now, we would like want to help them, right? Like, okay, that maybe they came in and forgot, didn't have, or they weren't in their right mind. It's considered an embarrassing thing, an awkward thing. In Bible times, it was flat out shameful. It was like legit offensive. And in some ways it can be, but in this time, in Bible times, it was understood no one ever sees you like this. There's actually a story in the book of Genesis where Noah, the guy who built the ark, Noah fell asleep one night and was exposed. And he was by himself, but he was exposed. And one of Noah's sons saw him naked. And it was the job of the sons, if anything like that ever happened, to run and cover up their naked father as soon as possible, to remove that shame from him. And he didn't. Instead, he went and told his brothers, "Hey, guess what? I saw Dad naked." And the brothers went and covered him up. But when Noah discovered what took place, he actually called down a lifelong curse upon the son who did this. That's how big of a deal it is. He cursed his own son for the rest of his life because of how he did not cover up Noah in his shame. So Adam and Eve, at the end of Genesis 2, they're naked and they feel no shame. Beginning of Genesis chapter 3, Satan, in the form of a serpent, shows up to the woman, Eve. And he looks and he says, "Hey, Eve, tell me about that tree, that tree of, you're not supposed to eat from it? Is that what God said?" And Eve said, "Well, yeah, that's the tree of knowledge of good and evil." And God said, "We're not supposed to eat from that or we'll die." And Satan looks and says, "Did he really say that, though? You're not going to die if you eat that, Eve. If you eat from this tree of knowledge of good and evil, then, well, God doesn't want you to eat from it because you'll become like God. And God just doesn't want that. God doesn't want you to be as wise and smart and knowledgeable as you. You can eat it. He's just afraid of you." So Eve takes it. She eats it. She then goes and finds Adam. She gets him to eat some. And immediately, they are aware of their nakedness. So they go, they find some fig leaves, and they come up with some coverings so that they won't be naked in their shame. And God is going along, and he's God's in the Garden of Eden, and Adam and Eve are hiding. And God said, "Adam, why are you hiding from me?" And Adam said, "Well, I was naked, and therefore I was ashamed, and so I didn't want you to see me." And God said, "How'd you know you were naked? Wait, did you eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil?" And Adam, being the loyal husband that he was, says, "Well, it was the woman that you gave me that gave me this fruit." Eve, and then God looks, "Eve, what have you done?" And Eve takes a page out of Adam's playbook it was this serpent here, this snake, that told me to do it. God looks at the serpent, what have you done? And the serpent goes, well, it was this, I got nothing. And God begins doling out the punishments. Looks at the serpent, says, you will crawl on your belly for the rest of your life. Looks at Eve and says, from here on out, you will have pain in giving birth to children. He looks at Adam and says, you will now have to work the ground to get your food. And he looks at Adam and Eve and says, well, from dust that you came, and to dust you now shall return. And so they eventually end up getting cast out of the Garden of Eden, but I can't help but look at what happens after God doles out those punishments, because God, then it says that God made clothes from skin for Adam and Eve to wear. Despite their disobedience, despite breaking the one rule, the one law that God commanded, God still provides. And when Jonah is told to do the one thing and he does the opposite, God still provides. And I want to focus in on that story, because when we talk about stories of God's provision, oftentimes we'll hear stories along the lines of something you might hear quite often in different people's lives. If you just Google in God's provision, stories of God's provision, you will find tens of thousands of stories. Some are going to be similar. My family and I, we lost our jobs and we were low on money, and we needed God to come up with a way. We needed money so that we could have food or pay for this thing, and we were down to our last dollar, and a check for however much money, which was exactly what we needed, showed up in our mailbox. Praise God, God provided. And that's good, great stories, right? I'm not speaking against those in any way, shape, or form. And how many times I needed this to happen, this person I love, or even I was super sick and I was given a 1% chance, and we prayed and prayed and prayed, and God came through. Amazing story. Not speaking out against it at all, but these are all stories of people who did everything they knew to do in terms of doing what God had called them to do. What about the people who do the opposite of what God calls them to do? And God provides for them? Dare I say, when God provides for those who go against what he calls them to do, this is what we call grace. This is what we call the gospel. That God loved the world so much that he gave us his one and only son, who then goes around the world saying, you don't know how to do it. Let me show you this way. Let me show you this life. And then God allows us to then kill his one and only son, who showed us that way so that we may take the place of his son for eternity in heaven. The story of us going against the will of God and God providing for us anyway, well, that's the story of Scripture in so many ways. And Paul speaks to this tendency of us to be tempted and go against the wishes of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 12 and 13. Paul says, so if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. And this story of provision, it's our story in so many ways too. No, we weren't necessarily told to go to the biggest city in a nation at the time and preach against. But God has invited us into a life that we have wandered away from in more ways than one. And in some ways, we didn't even choose it, and it just kind of happened. But God still provides. And here's why. Story of Jonah, story of Adam and Eve, the story of Elijah, Moses, David, the story of you, the story of me. It's not actually about them. It's not actually about us. It's about God. When we look at the story of Jonah, we look at Jonah as the main character. Well, the book's about him. He might have even wrote it himself. It would make sense, right? Maybe so, but the book's not about Jonah. It's about God. It's about God's love and God's provision. Yes, things get weird, but it's also about how God, even in the weirdness, even maybe by and through the weirdness, still provides for each and every one of us. So I'm going to invite the prayer team to head to the back. I'm going to invite our praise team to come out to the front. I'm going to invite you to consider your life in ways that you needed God to provide. Perhaps it's in a season where things are tough financially. Perhaps you or a loved one is dealing with a health issue. Perhaps you've found yourself in a mess that maybe you created yourself. And I will tell you, we serve a God who loves us so much that he would love to provide in and through this mess that you have made. Jonah is a symbol of this. It might be a really weird way that we are not prepared for, but that's exactly who God is and what God does. God finds these unique ways to show and teach that even in the darkest times that even we have created ourselves, that God is still with us and in us and moving through us in ways that will ultimately bring glory to him. So if you would like to pray about a way that you need for God to provide in this season of your life, you have an opportunity to head to the back and ask our prayer team that as we stand and sing this next song.